Karen, I'm an alcoholic. Karen. My sobriety date's October 18th, 1991. I want to say hi to Kristen. Hey, it's good to see you, Kristen. Yeah. I was expecting Blair to come up and say all these great things about me, so I wasn't expecting to come up right now because he's the one who's forcing me to do this. You know, it's funny because I hate public speaking. I've never enjoyed this, and I every time I think if I could just, like, run in the back, throw down a little, I'd come out here with some confidence, and that's the way I think. I grew up in St. Pete. I grew up in Clearwater, Florida. It's going to take me a second to get my rhythm here, people, so just bear with me. In a house on the beach, I come from a really good family. My father was an executive with a very well-known local brewery. My mom wrote for a local paper, worked for the radio station. They loved me very much. I went to a private Catholic school. I had a pony. There was nothing wrong with my childhood. I was not, you know, and I'm not discounting this in any way, but I didn't have a funny uncle who crept into my room in the middle of the night. I've never had an eating disorder. I never injured myself. I didn't have anything wrong with my life, with my childhood. Everything was perfect. So there really was no excuse for what ended up happening, other than the magic of alcoholism. So, like I said, I grew up on the beach in Clearwater, private school. My father worked for that well-known local brewery. Always had beer in the house. Grew up drinking beer. No big deal. And you know how people have, like, Christmas ornaments in their hall closets? We had flats of beer. And that's how we would pay, like, the lawn guy and the roof guy. And, you know, they'd come over and we'd pay them in beer. And I got this whole barter thing down real quick. I like to say my dad taught me two things, how to taper off and how to drive with my knees. But he also taught me how to, like, work it out. And I learned that real easy, you know, early on. I talk about my parents a little bit, but I need to say that they're both sober members of Alcoholics Anonymous in good standing before I go any further. We got sober at totally different times, different parts of the world, and it's kind of a crazy thing, but if you're carried the message of recovery in a clear-cut, concise way, I guarantee you, too, can stop drinking. So because my father worked for this brewery, there was a lot of beer in the house, and we had kind of like, it was a party thing, and it was the 70s, and a lot of people were always over, and it was a fun, exciting way of life. You know, it was happy. There weren't problems. And I had really good, you know, feelings about beer. People relax. They kind of, you know, step out easy. We'd go swimming, go out on the boat, whatever. Never had a problem with it. My parents, and that's the way it went along for a while. So I have to have a clock. I can't see that. But somewhere along the lines, magically a line gets crossed. Happens for everybody who's alcoholic. Somewhere you lose control of your drinking. You no longer are able to, control the amount you take. And I watched this happen in my family. And I would be coming home from Catholic school in the uniform and la 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 la, and all of a sudden there'd be like naked people in the house. And my father was missing work. And my mom's throwing up all over the pool table. And it's getting embarrassing. And I realized that they're not just drinking beer. Like, in our house, we had a refrigerator, and there were these cabinets over the door, and there was gin and scotch up there. You know, I don't even know if they do this anymore, but that's where parents used to hide their liquor. And I thought, like, that's where the problem was with this gin and scotch, because they had been drinking beer the whole time. I drank beer. It's cool, whatever. You know, and not like, you know, I was a cool 10-year-old, but, like, it was no big deal. It was in the house. But they started to engage in these behaviors that were embarrassing for me. And I was having to go locate the car for my mom before my dad got home because she had lost it. And, you know, my father is starting to work that real famous 3-day work week, you know, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. And my mom's calling in sick. And you know, there's personality changes that start occurring. And I was like, you know, this isn't cool. I don't like them. I'm in like fifth grade, sixth grade. Like I said, it's starting to embarrass me. And I decided I'm not going to drink when I grow up. I'm not going to be like them. You know, I'm like a teetotaler 9-year-old, you know. I'm not even drinking the beer in the house. And I make a decision. Nobody even had to offer me a temperance pledge like they talk about in the book. I made my own decision. I'm not drinking. And that lasted for, you know, a couple of years. I was like, you know, 9. It's not like people were making me drink anyway. But in the meantime, like I said, it started getting embarrassing in my house. I didn't want to be there anymore. I was tired of going to Catholic school because everybody knew my parents. And, you know, my friends would give me shit about it. Like, does your mom get to have her shirt on when we get home, you know? Which is not cool under any circumstances. My son would die if he walked in the door and I was like, hey, you know? And she was embarrassed. I don't want to make it sound like she wasn't. You know, they kept trying to kind of work it out and make it happen. So, in any event, 9th grade comes along. I refuse to go to Central Catholic. I'm going to go to public school. My parents are, you know, I'm starting to rebel. They're just cool. Okay, whatever, just be good. You can go to Clearwater High. And I go to Clearwater High. So I now have in my 9th grade as many people as were in my entire school, you know, for the first 8 years. I don't know anybody. And I don't have, like, I'm not the cool girl with the cool parents and the boat and the pony and the, you know what I mean? Like, they don't know who I am. They don't care who I am. And which makes me uncomfortable. And, you know, I will say that, you know, I always felt like I fit in until then. I didn't have, like, a safety net anymore. And I met a guy. And he had a car. And, you know, I'm 14 years old. And God, I really hope my parents don't ever hear any of my talks. But I've warned them we never go to the same meetings. And he says, you know, I'm going to pick you up at the bus stop, 7 o'clock in the morning, and we're going to skip school, and, you know, we're going to go to Jill's house or what, I don't know. And I'm like, cool, because, you know, I don't know anybody. And he's got a car. He had a Monte Carlo. Wow. So he picks me up at the bus stop. He's got 2 bottles of Andre Cold Duck, which I don't even know what this is. Like, whatever. It's not gin. It's not scotch. He's like, we're going to Jill's friend's house. I probably shouldn't say that. And this is what I remember about that day. She had 1 blue eye and 1 brown eye. And he gave me a bottle of cold duck. And I remember sitting in a recliner. And I remember, you know, having a little bit of cold duck. It's like 8 in the morning, whatever. And all of a sudden, it was like I had needed glass. Did this thing just come on? Okay, great. It was like I had needed glasses my whole life and I didn't know it. It was like all of a sudden I got it. I like got into this groove that was happening all around me and I didn't know. It did for me what I couldn't do for myself. I didn't even know I was missing this thing. And it's like, you know what people talk about, you know, the first time I did acid and like I totally got it. That happened to me with cold duck. Like I didn't even know it could go any further. I was like, I'm home. And that's the end of what I remember that day. So we're like 8:15, 9 o'clock. Apparently it was a really big day for me. I also was like, hey, yeah, give me a cigarette. Oh, yeah, you're really cute. Yeah. And I showed my boyfriend how much I loved him. And I've been smoking and all this shit. But, you know, what I remember is, yeah, I don't know. It was a big moment. You know what's really funny is he Facebooked me recently and said, hey, Karen, do you remember me? And I was like, oh, pause when agitated. Like, I don't even know how to respond to this one. Anyway, so this is what I remember. I remember coming home. I remember coming to in the middle of the night. And I don't know, some of you will, this is how old I am. We had this phone, you had to plug it into the wall. And I unplugged it from the kitchen and snuck it into my bedroom and started calling my friends. Who's going with me to do this again tomorrow? Because that was awesome. I am never going back to school again. There's like cold duck out there. Or like, let's get it on, Marvin Gaye style. Or whoever. And, you know, he was down for it, of course. But everybody else, you know, people had gotten in trouble. Apparently her parents hadn't come home. School had been contacted. You know, it was a big deal. We were very underage, very drunk, crazy naked kids running around this house. It's very illegal, you know? And people were not okay with, like, no, we're not doing it again. They got sick. They were grounded, you know, whatever. And I was like, okay, you know, that's your loss. I got Monte Carlo, and boy, he really likes me now. And I set out, I spent the next 10 years searching for that experience that I had that first night. And I let me tell you, I've never done anything as well or tried as hard as I tried to recapture that. On average, for the next 4 years, I missed on average 80 days a year at school for the next 4 years. Because this was before the, if you miss 10 days, you can't graduate. I had had a really solid, rock-hard Catholic school foundation of an education. So their public school nonsense wasn't going to get me. So I could go in, take a test, get an A, leave, go get drunk, come back, you know, and I got away with it. And I learned that I was very adaptable. I learned a new skill set. Like, I was able to add to my repertoire with regularity. And these were not necessarily skills that were the best skills to have, but they suited me well at the time. And I was able to become what I needed to become and do what I needed to do to get the job done. And I had a good time. I don't want anyone to ever think I did not love it. I loved drinking. I really did. I loved alcohol. It enabled me to do what someone I admire very much used to call step out easy. I could just step out easy. You know, you were better looking. I was better looking. We were going to get along and have a good time. And it did. I had a really good time for a while. You know, high school, crazy drunk girl, former Catholic school, you know, it's the early 80s, punk rock. That's what happened to me. And it was exciting, and I was, you know, I was an exciting person, so, it fit in really well. You could get really drunk and swear and kick out a windshield, and everyone thought it was cool. And that's what I did. I spent a lot of time in Tampa at Club Detroit and, you know, Ybor before... You know, when it was just like the hookers and the drunk girls and the, you know, Goya, the gay bar. And I learned that there's always someone who will buy you a drink. There's always someone who will buy you a drink. Mostly they're those guys who dropped out of school early. You know who you are. Hanging out with the girls who are supposed to be in high school. There's probably a couple of you here. But they'll always get you, they will always buy you a drink. And I learned that. You know, pretty early too. And I spent a lot of time hanging out with people I probably shouldn't have been hanging out with in situations I probably shouldn't have been in. You know, just stepping out easy. And like I said, I had a good time. By the time I was in 11th or 12th grade, my parents started noticing a change. They were like slow on the updraw. And so they decide they're going to send me to France for the summer. Because that's going to straighten me out. Because that's where you should send every hard-drinking young woman with a whole lot of cash. And, I've got to say, I borrow from people really liberally. So if you hear something that I've said that, you know, is actually yours, you can totally take your props. But I really believe that God watches out for drunks and fools. Because there is no reason for me to be, like, standing here in front of you today. I was... completely drunk, belligerent in a foreign country. You know, and it's funny, but it's not. Like, coming to in Switzerland, I don't speak whatever they even speak over there. You know what I mean? And I'm just looking, you know, to get a drink. By the time I'm 17 years old, I'm starting, you know, I've already learned that if you throw up, you make more room. And I've already learned that if you start, like, drinking a little tiny bit in the morning, then you don't get as sick. You know, and I'm already adapting in these ways. But it's not quite as funny what's happening to me anymore, which is I'm coming out of blackouts. First time drinking, you know, the man and the cigarette and the, you know, that was a blackout. I didn't know everybody didn't do that. I thought it was like part of the accessory package. Mm-hmm. You know, and I'm coming out of blackouts swinging on people. And I'm coming out of blackouts, you know, having interaction with law enforcement. And I'm coming out of blackouts half naked in foreign countries. And it's a little unnerving. It's not as funny. So I start trying to get back to the sweet spot. I had this thing in my head that if I could stick to somewhere between 5 and 7 drinks, that's where I needed to be. That's where I always wanted to be, between 5 and 7 drinks. And son of a bitch, if I didn't overshoot that mark almost every freaking time, without fail. And I would hit it. I would, well, actually, and it's funny, because, you know, if I'm standing next to somebody who cracks open a beer, right now, 20 years sober, my mouth will water. I don't have the desire to drink. God has removed the desire to drink. But I have a Pavlovian physiological response to alcohol that is unnerving, and it's pervasive, you know? So I totally forgot where I was going before that. But but that's really important. So I'm trying to, you know, I've learned that there's these things with drinking. You know, I'm trying to control it. So here I am, 17 years old, trying to control my drinking, which is ridiculous, but I'm going to do it. That was always my attitude. I can pull this off. We can work it out. You know, field interviews with cops, we can work it out. You know, and when I was driving and drinking, you would get pulled over. They would say, pour out what you have open. I don't want to see you here again. Stop smoking weed. That was my boyfriend, not me. And go. And they didn't even follow you home. And this is the 80s. But I got away with a lot. You know, and I'm not saying like, oh, I'm so cool. You know, I got away drinking and driving. I got really freaking lucky a lot of times. But I also paid a price some of those times to get away with that. Nobody rides for free. It's funny, I found a license plate recently that said gas, grass, or ass. Remember that one? Yeah. I get that. Because nobody rides for free. I paid my way in one way or another in all those situations. So I graduate. Of course I don't remember it. And I've got one good girlfriend. One good girlfriend. She's a dyed-in-the-wool Al-Anon. We are still friends. She's getting ready to marry her second alcoholic husband. God bless her. And, you know, her father's alcoholic, her best friend's alcoholic, all her men are alcoholic. And her mother is a psych nurse. And I'm at her house one day. And it's funny because her mom, who, you know, she was very like, you know, girls got to protect themselves. You know, she had this book of what happens when you have sexually transmitted diseases. Pictures. You know, she's a nurse, and this is like this thing that's going to make, you know, us not want to have sex, which I'm not even remember doing anyway. But, and it's funny because she keeps it on this shelf next to this other book called Alcoholics Anonymous because she's a psych nurse. And I remember her telling me, I'm 17 years old. Have you ever heard of Alcoholics Anonymous? And I'm like, no. They have banned. And she starts telling me, you know, it's this organization, you stop drinking, they'll help you. So what do I call my mom. I'm like, Mom, you need to go to Alcoholics Anonymous. Kathy says. And I'm over there at her house, and, you know, nobody's in the room, and I pull that book next to the sexually transmitted disease book, the AA book. So they were in my head together, which probably wasn't good. Like, AA. But, actually probably was good. But I pull it out, and I open it up, and what does it open up to? God, I offer myself to thee. To do with, and I'm like, hell no. And I shut the book. I remember this. And I put it back. And that was my first introduction to Alcoholics Anonymous, and I was done. So at this point, I have Nikki. She's my one friend. Nobody else wants to be my friend because I'm going to sleep with your boyfriend. I'm going to kick out your windshield. Law enforcement's going to get involved. It's not as funny when you're 17 as when you're 15. People are always like, why do you got to drink so much, you know? Why do you have to act like that? And but Nikki, Al-Anon, she's always there for me. And I say that lately, but God bless Al-Anons because, you know, I'd have been dead if it weren't for her. She pulled me out of a lot of bars, out of a lot of yards, out of a lot of situations, trying to fix me. She decides she's moving to San Diego, California, and she's my only friend. So I'm going to move to San Diego, California, too. Because, you know, really the problem is the Bay Area. You guys aren't cool. The cops here aren't cool. My parents are whatever. It's not like I'm going to college, but I convinced my parents that I've been accepted to a college in San Diego. Like, there's supposed to be a letter or something that says that. But I think they were just glad I left. They give me more money, and I get in a U-Haul, and you know, and the honest truth is, you know, the day I left, my parents were so drunk they couldn't get up out of bed to say goodbye to their daughter leaving across the country. Because that's what alcoholism does. They still feel terribly guilty about these things, but I harbor no ill will. Let Alcoholics Anonymous will take care of all of that bullshit. I've done so good with not swearing till right now. So we drive across the country, San Diego, California. Nikki's met a boy. She's I'm going to, you know, whatever college they have out there. And we get out there, and we're staying with friends, which I'm already really good at. And I get a job waiting tables, which is a really great job if you're drinking. I highly recommend it. You got cash in hand. At a little resort, you know. And there's always, again, someone willing to meet you after work, buy you a drink. And I did that for a little bit. New situation, everything's going to be different. And this is where everything really starts to go to hell. I spent a couple years out in San Diego. I remember very little of it. I think I was like 19 when I moved there. There's some time between the high school and the moving. So I've moved. I'm in San Diego. I'm waiting tables. I have great aspirations. I'm going to go to college. And this is where I start thinking I'm going to start getting my life together. It's different. Nobody knows me. They don't know that, you know, my license has been suspended because there's no computers. So sad. And I think now, you know, I'm gonna make a go of this. And I start trying to figure out how to work it out. I'm gonna work it out. I'm only gonna drink, you know, after work. I'm only gonna drink on the weekends. I'm only gonna take $20 with me to the bar. Like a woman can't get someone to, you know what I'm saying? Like, I'm 20 years old. Who's not gonna buy a 20-year-old girl a drink? You know, but I start having rules. I'm not gonna drink at work, even when everyone else is. I'm not gonna, you know, whatever. Like I said. And I start missing work. I'm meaning to go to work. I'm gonna go to work. I'm just gonna stop off at Trevor's house. We're just gonna kick it, have a beer, and I don't make it to work. I'm enrolled in the junior college. I heard someone say once, and I'm gonna screw it up, but it was like, if there was a 5-yard dash, I would be Olympic, because I start out great. I get hired for every job I apply for, you know, and everyone's cool, and it's gonna be fun, and this is gonna be different, and son of a bitch, if I don't come to 3 days later in Tijuana, Mexico, some woman's like, you know, I'm in a broom closet, I got no clothes. And it's funny now, but it's not funny when it's happening. Because I don't speak Espanol any more than I speak that other one. And, you know, Catholics, we got a little Latin, but nothing you can use in, you know, that situation. And it starts not being so funny. And I'm lowering the bar. I'm lowering the bar left and right. I'm trying to go to work. I'm losing my jobs. And, you know, you can keep waiting tables in San Diego. It's not like you're going to run out of places to go. But, you know, people aren't as eager to hire me. I'm hanging out in places. There was this place called Stingers on Pacific Beach. It's all like 60 and 70-year-old men. Because I know someone's going to buy me a drink. You walk in there, 20-something years old, someone's buying you a drink in Stingers. Come on, I'm the only game in town. You know? And I start, you know, in retrospect, and now I call it trading down. I start trading down. Can't keep a job. And, you know, people don't think I'm the crazy funny party girl. I don't feel like the crazy funny party girl. I'm trying to get a handle on this. I'm going to stop, and I'm going to get a job, and I'm going to go to school, and that's what I'm going to do. And I mean it. I'm not playing. You know, I've been doing this for a couple years. I'm in my early 20s. I'm going to straighten up. It's going to be different. Start having other rules for myself. You know, okay, well, I'm not going to drink, you know, first thing in the morning unless I've been staying up all night long drinking, because you got to taper off. And, you know, these rules don't even make sense anymore, but I remember having them. I'm not going to drink hard liquor. I'm just going to drink, you know, beer. Wine, I don't know, you can't drink wine for long, but I'm just going to drink wine, which, you know, that didn't work out well either. I miss big chunks of time. I can't pay my bills. I've got people who are willing to let me stay with them, you know, because I swear I'm going to pay my bills. And I can't. On the series of humiliating things that happen to every woman who's an alcoholic woman, just start, you know, they're just piling up. We all know what they are. I don't need to be like, ugh. You know, we all know what happens. I am, 5'2", 110 on an honest day, like, with a big mouth. I'm going to get myself in trouble, and, you know, I'm going to come up swinging, and I'm not, you know, you're going to win. I would drink myself to the point where I could hear what was going on, but I didn't have the motor skills to get up off the floor. I couldn't make it stop if I wanted to. And then, so then what happens? Well, I don't want to think about that. What's the best way not to think about that? The drink, take the edge off. And it's never getting better. But I'm going to muscle through it. It's going to be different. You know, I'm going to get married like someone's going to marry me. And it's time to get sober. You know, I don't eat when I drink, and I'll go into blackouts. It'll last for days. You know, I can't brush my teeth anymore because my mouth is so screwed up. Like, when I smoke a cigarette, blood runs down between my teeth. I didn't know at the time, but I had the beginnings of pancreatitis and a bleeding ulcer. You know, I'm 23 years old. And like, walking around barefoot downtown San Diego, looking to work it out with you, because, you know, you got a bottle. Like, this is not funny. This isn't, you know, I had one too many at the Kager, and, you know, some guys got, you know what I mean? That's not what's happening. Like, I can't stop drinking. And I'm trying, and I mean it, and I'm praying. You know, okay, well, God, if I'm not pregnant or whatever, you know, or if maybe I could just, you know, I'm having these imaginary conversations. There's no ass behind it. I'm trying to get out of situations. And I ended up being interviewed by law enforcement in San Diego. And they do it differently there, and this is brilliant. So all you young people should start doing this here, because it's a good idea. Because drunk people just clog up the jails. They don't take drunk people to jail in San Diego, or they didn't. They would, you know, because really we're pretty harmless. No, I thought I had to. Are you kidding? When does the meeting end? I thought it was 9. Blair! I'd have gotten sober a long time ago. No, I'm not. I'm serious, though. I would have. This is the best part. I ended up getting interviewed by law enforcement, right? Or, you know, detained. Actually, what it was is cuffed and stuffed, and I'm in a blackout, and I don't know what's happening, and I come out of the blackout, because this is how I black out. I come out of the blackout. I'm already having a conversation with you, and I hear them. I'm giving them my grandparents' phone number, and they want my social security number, and I'm going, 796-9102, and they're like, that's not the right number. And they think I'm on heroin. They don't believe I'm drinking, because they're like, people don't. Well, I got tattoos, and they're like, you know, it's the, you know, early 90s, and gangsters and whatever. And I'm like, no, I just, you know, I'm drinking Carlo Rossi Burgundy with the handle, the loop, because you can hang on to it. And they take me to this thing called Detox, or a Volunteers of America Detox. Instead of taking you to the jail, drunk in public, it makes perfect sense. Because really, I'm just a hassle for the locals and the tourists. And they take me to Volunteers of America Detox, and I'm in there, and it's a room, and with a line down the middle, and like a drain, and like all those gross tumbling mats you have, girls, you know, in the little kids' gym, you know what I mean? And like, it's like all these homeless Vietnam vets and me, and there's a line, because I'm not supposed to be over there, but I'm like, hey, you know, and people from Alcoholics Anonymous come hang out in this place, and they try to talk to people. And you know, really, I talked to that guy because he was cute, and he, you know, had tattoos, and I figured he'd buy me a drink, and she was not down for, but he did talk to me, and other people did too. They talked to me about how they used to drink, and they don't, and, you know, they go to Alcoholics Anonymous, which to me meant sexually transmitted disease, but whatever. It got my attention because they kind of had a certain legitimacy to them that I didn't recognize in other people, you know. And they keep you at detox for 4 hours until you're ambulatory. And, you know, let me go. And I'm not even going to tell you that part. And I keep drinking. And I keep drinking, and it's just getting worse and worse and worse. And one night, you know how you come out of it and you don't know if it's 7 o'clock at night or 7 o'clock in the morning because it's seven, but it's kind of dark and it's kind of light. And you know, I'm in this room and it smells like shit and it's me and I don't know where I am. And I realize that this is who I am. This is who I am. It is never going to get better. This is who I am. I had this moment where I realized this was probably the best it was going to be. And I asked God for help. God, will you help me out here? And, you know, I didn't know where I was. And, you know, those people from AA had given me a way to contact, you know, them. And I did. I called someone. How I even had this, like, it doesn't make sense to me, really. When people have really clear stories of how they got sober, I'm like, yeah, right. Because I was, you know, drunk for the previous 10 years, and it was really confusing for me. But they got me. They came and got me, and they took me to an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting. This is what I remember.